Mukam karoti vachalam pangum nangaite inyapit Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Sadhguru Madhava. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Prabhupada explained that all these four legs of religion may be followed by any person, any type of faith. It doesn't matter whether one is from a Christian faith or Mohammedan or Hindu. It may be followed by the follower of any faith, because these principles of religion are meant for the human civilization. We do not find these principles of religion in the lower species of life. So there are no such principles for cats, dogs, camels, and asses. We do not find huge propaganda trying to educate these different entities in following principles of religion. So these are meant for the human being. These are meant for the civilized human being. So it is very important to understand that actually when we propagate these principles of Bhagavad Dharma, it is attractive to anyone. It doesn't necessarily mean that only a person from India will be able to understand these principles, or only a person who was born in a Vaishnava family can understand these principles of religion, but anyone can actually, from any faith, can appreciate and put into practice these principles of religion. They are universal principles. So there's no need for someone to deny them on the basis of their bodily designation, their gender, or their age, etc. According to time, place, and circumstance, of course, these have been explained in different ways. So the whole rule of the Bhagavad Gita is to actually propagate these principles of religion. Now, austerity, of course, it is not only for the brahmacharis or for the brahmanas, but it is for all different social and spiritual classes. So whether it's in the vanashram system for the brahmanas such as Vaishyas and Sudras, there's a certain amount of austerity that one needs to perform so that they can actually realize the value of the human form of life. So austerity, either from the bodily point of view, controlling the tongue, controlling the different urges of the body, that falls under the category of performing austerity. So performing an activity for a higher cause or for a higher goal, that can be classified as austerity. So the whole point of performing such austerity, of course, the consciousness behind it, is to get you a higher realization about one's identity. We do know that some persons try and perform austerity, like for example, there's so many retreats that people go to, or people formulate, like, there can be a silent retreat, there can be an intuition retreat, people do breathing retreats, etc. But the point, of course, is not to come to the conclusion that we should practice Bhagavad Dharma, a religion, or we should accept the absolute truth. For them, the point of Mona Vrata is to feel good, the form of subtle sense gratification. I was silent for 10 days. It has been beneficial for me, and I feel good about myself. Therefore, that was the aim and goal of why I was performing this austerity. So this is not necessarily the type of austerity that will help one become religious, or that will help one come to the platform of Sanatana Dharma, our eternal constitutional position. So austerity should be performed in order to increase our understanding and our realization of the importance of the principles of religion. So there is a certain goal that, and a certain mood and consciousness that should prevail when one is actually practicing austerity, whether it's austerity of the mind, austerity of speech, austerity of the tongue and the body. These are all performed to try and realize the highest truth. So anything that falls below that comes into the category of irreligion, and that is where we see the rise of greed, the rise of misfortune, cheating, quarrel, etc. And this is what you find when there's not such a clear, a high consciousness, unless the whole understanding of trying to be austere or practice austerity, there's some cheating propensity that comes into play. There's some misfortune, there's some falsehood, there's some misidentification, because it is all centered around the bodily platform of existence. So it is not actually leading to a higher understanding of the principles of religion. So it is very important that the principle of religion are always in line with Vedic texts and Vedic scriptures, so that people actually know what they're performing, they know what the goal is, and they know what the process is to achieve it. Not that we whimsically make up our own set of austerities, our own set of rules, our own codes and conduct of religion. So whenever we do not have these principles of religion, like austerity, cleanliness, of course cleanliness not only externally but also internal cleanliness, by cultivating a higher consciousness, by raising the level of our awareness, means that we get to clean our subtle body and we get to activate our intelligence. And to activate our intelligence means we have to study books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. That is how we sharpen our intelligence, so that we're able to discriminate between what is right and what is wrong, what is good for our existence and what is not good for our existence. What you speak of internal cleanliness, that is such a high category of Kali Yuga. External cleanliness itself is kind of very, very low. And you can see that, you know, people eat and drive at the same time. You know, they have a bunch of chips here and they're holding the steering wheel. They're wiping their hands at the same time. They don't brush their teeth. They don't take normal showers at the same time every day. They're not cleaning their houses. They just leave it as is. So even external cleanliness, it is very difficult. Or sometimes we see, it may look as if there is some form of external cleanliness. Sometimes when I was a child and I used to play tennis, we would travel to different countries, and there you'd share, you'd be in a hotel room with someone from another country, so you'd be friends and you'd share space. So you'd see them, they'd wake up, some of them would wake up in the morning, and just put some new fresh clothes on, just brush their hair, take deodorant, just spray it, wet their hands, and just kind of like pat it on their hair to make it look like, you know, it's fresh, you just came out of the shower, and put some mascara, put something shiny on your lips, you smell good, you look good, you know, you just walk out. And maybe some point during the day they'll take a shower or something, or wash their hair. So, and that is kind of like normal, just jump up, have a coffee, you're good to go, and just walk out of the house. So, and people think there's nothing wrong with it. You smell nice, you look good, what's the big deal? Of course we understand that it is very unclean. How can you be situated in the right consciousness when you haven't got rid of this tamagun influence. And you can tell it sometimes if you wake up in the morning and you're still in tamagun, you're walking around before you take a shower, and you're kind of like, you're out of it. The mode of ignorance is so strong, and once you get into the shower, you can feel how, because water is a purifying element, it is purifying your body, and you actually wake up from the mode. Whether you go out in the water or you stand outside in the blazing wind, wind is also purifying, you wake up. So this is, it needs to be understood that external cleanliness itself in Kali Yuga, you know, it's a big thing. It's a big cause of concern. So we're fighting against this cleanliness, of course, the more you see the production of colognes, the production of so many external things that try to hide the fact that there is no cleanliness in Kali Yuga. People might have homes, you know, it's in this Albert Park region. People have a lot of homes with glass windows, glass doors, so you can actually see in their houses. And for some, sometimes it looks like really, really clean. Like it's not dusty, it's like, wow, it's wooden floors, it looks really clean. Like, whoa, it even looks better than the ashram sometimes, it looks cleaner than in the temple. Oh, these guys are really clean, they're satsagun. Right. But then when you open the cupboard and when you see what the mode of operation is, it is for sense gratification. So then that entire activity is actually tainted. It becomes contaminated. What everything, the big swimming pools, the saunas, the this, it is all for gratifying one's existential body and the expansions of the body and how to enjoy our bodily faculties, the tongue, the belly, the genitals. And in the 12th canto, when Mother Earth starts explaining the tendencies and the personalities in Kali Yuga, she starts explaining how persons will just be interested not in taking care of their family, friends. They'll just be interested in caring for their belly and the genitals. They'll, you know, a woman will just be interested in acquiring what they need, whether it's entails killing a husband or mother or father, they'll become that selfish. Right? Business or economic interactions are going to be so shrewd that there will be no moral code, there will be no ethics at all. So this is the result, there's a lack of cleanliness of consciousness. Basically. And this consciousness becomes so polluted and so diluted that it produces all these irreligious effects. So that I was listening yesterday, there was one documentary on food, and this is coming from small children. One British, journalist, he was in London, of course, and he went into a school and he's trying to see the level of awareness or the state of consciousness of kids who were between 9 and 13, what enthuses them, what arouses them. So he had different signs with him. So at first he pulled up a sign and it was the pound mark. So that he would ask the kids, okay, what is this? Oh, that's the pound. Like you have a dollar and people know, oh, that's the American dollar sign. Oh, this is the pound sign. And the kids were kind of like not so enthusiastic. Oh, okay, yeah, dollar, yeah, pound, next. And then next he brought up, I think it was a piano, like, oh yeah, piano, yeah, okay. And the kids were kind of out of it, bored. And then he snatched out the McDonald's M, you know, the McDonald's sign, and the kids went frantic. And so they said, McDonald's! And they just started screaming and shouting, and he was okay. And then after that, he took out the Coca-Cola sign. And they're like, Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola! And they knew all the songs about Coca-Cola, they knew all the songs about Ronald McDonald, and they were doing all the motions, etc. And he was saying, oh, this is where the kids are at. And I'm talking about like 9, 10-year-olds. Their consciousness is absorbed in what they know. And what do they know? McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Cadbury, chocolate bars, donuts, Starbucks. They even know Starbucks. What does a 9-year-old know about Starbucks coffee? So that is where their consciousness is. So you can see that, as Prahlad Maharaj always said, it is very important that personality, we get to learn the Krishna conscious principles from a very, very young age. When we're 5 years old, we should be, you know, in the Gurukul system, we should be learning about, you know, the higher principles in life. Where you see in Kali Yuga, even from a very small age, these children are being taught about, you know, how to be a Kali Yuga resident. Okay, it's all about sense gratification, it's all about McDonald's and Coca-Cola, it's all about the sugar and the caffeine and the meat industry. So that is all that they know. So from the get-go, their level of cleanliness and understanding is diminished. What you see, what austerity can they perform? In South America, they have these different cases of children who, they call it child terrorism. Like, the children dictate to their parents what they want to eat, and their parents have lost control, that they give them whatever they want to eat, but the children are becoming so obese, they suffer from high blood pressure, they suffer from, you know, ginger, they suffer from so many diseases by the time they're 8, because they're just being fed junk. From a consciousness point of view, from a health, they are being fed junk. So there's one kid who's this tiny, huge, okay, little round ball, like very obese for his age. And what does he like to eat? You know, a few chips here and there. And if he doesn't get it, he starts rolling and wailing and kicking. And eventually their parents give in, you know, they'll come for him. Okay, what do you want? You want chips? Okay, have your chips. And he just sits down, he has his chips, he has his chocolate. And the parents are doing the same. They'll say, give your dad some chips. Yeah, the dad is there. The dad is equally as humongous. The mother is equally as humongous. So there's no education from the parents' side. There's no education for the kids. So it's a whole thing. It's a whole generation relapse. Right? There's no understanding how to control the tongue. The austerity is not there. How to control the mind. The austerity is not there. There was also a mother and daughter situation. They were kind of encouraging each other to eat. Like, they were supersizing me. Right, they're British, of course. The daughter was bigger than the mother. I'm talking about the daughter weighed 6 stones. Right, and the mom, 6 stones, like she was about over 150 kilos. Right, and then the mother was maybe 120. And if you look at what they eat, they were encouraging each other, oh, they have Friday cake day. They sit down, and they have, like, on the bench top so many cakes, and they're just eating, right? And then they start breaking out in tears, oh, I don't know why I do this to myself, etc., etc., I'm so big, I can't do anything, I have foot problems, I have this, I have that. They cannot control the tongue. They cannot control the functions. They cannot control the body functions. So how can one really be free? Everybody's speaking about freedom, human rights, free this, free that, but they're actually not free. They are bound to the dictates of their uncontrolled mind. There's actually no freedom. So there's no cleanliness, there's no austerity. How can one be merciful towards oneself and those around them? They have no higher knowledge, so everything falls down on broken glass. There is actually no foundation as to how they should act. So even if we try to impregnate in an understanding that there is more to your uncontrolled habits of austerity and cleanliness, we should try and find out. Unless they see living examples of that, they will not follow. That is why in this chapter we see that Maharaj Parikshit is actually a living example of one who's actually putting into practice these four principles of religion, and that is why in his kingdom there is no way Kali Yuga would flourish, because he was a very strong Krishna conscious leader. As soon as there's some lacking, as soon as there's some as soon as there's less potency or less purity in implementing these principles of religion, or these the Bhagavatam religion, then So the proof that, yeah, this is happening, we are living amongst it. Because there's so much irreligion. Irreligion is seen as religion, and religion is seen as irreligion. You try to educate people about sense control and regulation and all these things. They cannot handle it. But if what we're seeing now is, you know, you're being encouraged, be the person you want to be, follow your dreams, it's your body, it's your mind, you can do what you want with your body and mind. Experiment. When you're a teenager, you're taught to experiment a little bit. When you're young, you only have once. These are all different mantras that some of us might have heard when growing up. And they don't necessarily help us become human beings, actually. We actually come down to the lower species, because this, you know, if we're just eating, sleeping, mating, and defending ourselves politically, economically, socially, then we're just polished animals. We're doing the same thing, but in a very polished manner. So we can see that the aims of, in general, the aims of religion are not being properly achieved in Kali Yuga, because irreligion is so strong in Kali Yuga. But in the name of religion, of course, we see that people try to come to a level of purity by, you know, unjust means. And that's why it always falls on broken glass. There's no value. So there can be so many technological advances, there can be so many scientific things, etc., etc. But as Devin Tamar was saying, you know, you have this perfect sharpened arrow, but you totally miss the point of life. It's great that you have like the scientific input and you understand cause and effect and how everything should be, you know, matched together. You're using your intelligence, which is great, but you've totally missed the point of life. Therefore, what is the value of such a civilization? There is no value. So if you just stick to the dogmas and formulas of Kali Yuga, you will not attain any Bhagavad Dharma. The dogmas, the formulas of Kali Yuga means that you interact on the bodily platform. And the bodily platform is the ultimate goal of life. Gratify your senses. Eat, consume, eat, consume, eat, consume. That is the main dogma in Kali Yuga. It's a consumerist mentality. Because everyone is thinking that they are the body, so they need to gratify the senses. So whatever feels good to them, that is the goal of life. Whether it's sensual, whether it's mental or intellectual, that is what one should strive for. This is Kali Yuga. So because of that, no real principles actually of religion are being achieved. So even, you know, the so-called executive heads, they are following these dogmas, they are putting forward these formulas. So the masses, they also follow suit, because whatever actions a great man performed, you'll think, okay, he's our executive head, he's our mayor, he's our protector, therefore we'll act like him. And therefore, the bedrock of society is very poor. It's based on poor principles. And this is why you see there's so much unrest, there's so much frustration. From those who have some kind of intelligence, they can see that there is no value in such a civilization, that these dogmas and formulas for material existence do not actually produce happiness. That there is no correlation between how much wealth one gets and the amount of happiness that one will achieve. But still, even with that understanding, people are so addicted to such a low standard and low consciousness in life that they're not willing to change or do anything about it. For example, in ecology, Gopal Mishra was mentioning yesterday at the university that from the 1960s there had been a huge rise in this ecological problem in the world. That at this point, if we wanted to have the same lifestyle as persons in America, we would need seven earths. We would need earth times seven to fulfill the greed of everyone. Right, in verse 8, this has been going on since the 1960s. Right, that thought was there that we are enjoying and we're exploiting the earth so rapidly that in a few years there'll be nothing left. So in the 1980s, the first paper was produced. So for 20 years there was this discussion going on, ideas being shared. It was a very slow process. So that slow process was there. And only up until now there's really a huge concern about this ecological problem in society, which started in the 60s. And the percentage of how many people are actually willing to do something about it is something of like 5%. Although the facts are clear, it is very clear that by 2016 there will be a water problem. That's in 2 years. We're facing water problems. Millions, about 200 million people are going to be without, you know, efficient, running, clean drinking water. That's in 2 years. But it's like, oh yeah, so what? It actually doesn't ring a bell because leaders in society are not taking it so seriously. They'd rather use 70% of the water to manufacture something like Coca-Cola and feed it to people and make them addicted to sugar. And that addiction to sugar makes their body and their brain function in a certain way. For example, a child, they say now that when a child is born, to stop them from crying, they swap a little bit of cotton wool in some water and sugar and just put it on the child's tongue and it pacifies the child. Because the sugar triggers dopamine in the brain, and that dopamine is a pleasure sensation. So the child feels happy. The child feels happy, they stop crying. And what parents do, they will give their child sugar. So each time the child has sugar, the child relates that sugar with the parent. So whenever they see that person, they think pleasure. They think, yes, I'm going to enjoy. So the child becomes fixated only on reciprocating or interacting with that one person who gives them sugar. That's why no matter how much you try to give the child is trying to give them to this person, they will not stop because they only relate pleasure to one person, that person who gives them the sugar. So Coca-Cola, so many foodstuffs, you know, the so-called water that we drink, etc., it is just being contaminated. And everything is being contaminated in Kali Yuga because the foundation principles are not to bring about a rise of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. It is bringing about irreligious principles, robbery, cheating propensity, greed. That's a reality. Because of people's greed, there is no standard as a human being. If you're greedy, you actually have no standards because your model is by any means necessary, I will acquire whatever I want to make myself happy. By any means necessary. Whether it means killing my own kinsman, whether it means stabbing my best friend in the back, whether it means marrying this person for money and disturbing so much of society, it doesn't matter, but it is giving me pleasure. Therefore, I will act. So this is the current state. These are the dogmas. These are the formulas for mature existence. It starts from a very young age. You're being taught all of this. Eat this, drink this. And people think that they're actually free, but they're actually being controlled by so-called corporations and executive heads. There is no freedom. One can only get freedom once they actually understand these Bhagavad Dharma principles. Once they actually understand how everything belongs to Krishna and how everything should be used in his service. not that we stop acting, we stop using things, but we actually engage every single activity in Krishna's service. We perform austerities for Krishna. Right? We control our tongue, our body, and our genitals in such a way that we become pleasing to Krishna. We perform cleanliness, whether internal or external, for the pleasure of Krishna. And by doing that, you know, miraculously we become purified and we become satisfied. So the Bhagavad religion urges that everyone, irregardless of where one has been born or what one's gender is, etc., it encourages everyone to take these principles. At least they will bring one to the point of human being. Prabhupada always said that the four regulative principles bring one to the point of being classified as a human being. So the fact that we are following these regulative principles, we can be assured that we're human beings now. Anyone who doesn't follow these principles, they're actually not human beings. They're polished animals. And yesterday in the Nectar of Devotion, I was reading how Prabhupada was saying, anyone who does not, it is on the first chapter, the characteristic of devotional service, how devotees acquire the qualities, saintly qualities, like the demigods. Prabhupada explains how if one does not become Krishna conscious, he actually has no good qualities. Like, it's full stop. And it's not like, yeah, he's a nice person. But if you're not cultivating Krishna consciousness, if you're not understanding how you're different from the body, if you're not understanding what real compassion is, what real humanitarianism is, from the spiritual point of view, not just a material point of view, where are the good qualities actually? And our actions will always be contaminated. Always. Because then we're functioning under the three modes of material nature. How can you truly help someone to continue swimming in the mode of material nature? That is not real help actually. If you just say, oh yeah, you know, I'll give you an umbrella, I'll give you a white umbrella, it'll make you look saintly, and you can continue splashing in the waters of the modes of material nature. And then tomorrow I'll give you a really fancy one, you can just stick it on your head, and you don't have to work much. You can continue in the modes of material nature. And tomorrow I'll bring you a really fancy one that is, you know, transparent, and you can enjoy as much as you want, you won't get as wet, or you won't drown as much, you won't cry as much. But at the end of the day, it's still in the modes of mature nature. So what is the real value? Right? Then we're actually cheating that person. We're not really helping them. We're actually cheating them. So real principles and real saintly personalities are Krishna conscious persons, because they understand what the real value of life is. They understand what Bhagavad Dharma is. And they understand what Sanatana Dharma is. That our eternal and constitutional position is that we're servants of Krishna. Irregardless, irrespective of where you were born, what religion you were born into, etc., our intrinsic value is that we're servants of Krishna. Now that is real leadership. This is what Maharaj Parikshit is functioning on. He has that Krishna conscious understanding. Therefore, he's free from any sort of lies, cheating, greed, propensity. That is why Kali could not reside when he was here. But he kept him at bay because he was pure. So this is an example of good executive leadership. The example of Maharaj leadership. So I'll stop there and I'll ask you any comments or questions. How does it develop? Well, because we do not have a clear understanding of our identity, therefore our actions will be minuscule, or they will lack weight and they will lack substance. So we'll really value no type of interaction. So everything will become cheap for us. you won't see the importance of having any morals and ethics. We'll just be like, yeah, whatever happens. So because of a lack of because of a lack of identity, actually, people become vain. We do not know who we are. We don't have direction in life. Therefore, we can't value anything. So we do not know that we're jivatma. We'll trash this body. We do not know that this body has been given to us by Krishna. The body is also referred to as atma. It belongs to Krishna, was given by Krishna, the senses are given by Krishna, etc. So we do not value these things. Then we don't take life so seriously. We think, oh yeah, we live once and that's it. And that's the end of me. So anything we do is just like cheap, weak, and inconsistent. There's no value in it. So we actually value nothing. Because there's no understanding. There's no strong identity. It is all cheap. Therefore, we don't treat people equally, or we do not see that people next to us are actually worthy. So you don't think twice about abortion. You don't think twice about animal slaughter. It's just a body. Where is the value? There is no value according to that type of consciousness. So you just act however you like, you do whatever you like.
Another question that I don't know how to ask. Like sometimes you see people that are not devotees that have apparent good qualities, selfless, trying to be good people, caring, and then maybe they don't take up Krishna consciousness, but then you see that people.
Well, the best quality that one may have is to actually accept Krishna. So if someone has accepted Krishna, that is a very wonderful quality. That is the best quality that one can have. Even if they were a drug addict or they're still a drug addict, welcome to the temple. You know, I used to smoke cigarettes and come to the temple. That is not exactly a good quality. I used to do a lot of things and still come to the temple, right? Where some people, they look like, they're nice persons. You know, some people have a genuine good heart. But when you speak about good qualities, quality is something that is your, that makes up your overall existence in life, that you have your set of principles and there's a certain motivation for it. So sometimes people are nice. They're good-hearted people. But what is the motivation? If you find, as I'm saying, the motivation might be gross or subtle. The motivation to give so much in charity might be a result of wanting to feel good about yourself. Right? Pratista, you might want some name and fame. It is a very subtle thing. They're not even aware of it. Even for devotees, sometimes we're not aware that we have that on our tongue. We want name, fame, and recognition. So even in the material existence, some people are generally nice, they have good hearts, but because of the ignorance or tamagun, ignorance and tamagun brings about with itself so many other undesirable qualities. Just like this material body, it brings about adi agnika, adi bhotika, adi devika. We go through these sufferings, it's automatic. So when you associate with the mode of ignorance, which is predominant in Kali Yuga, there will always be remnants of these undesirable qualities, either on the gross or subtle level. So sometimes people they have nice hearts, they're genuine, but they have underlying motives. Might be gross, might be subtle. Real good qualities are qualities on a spiritual platform, but that you're not identifying with the body. At least you're not trying to identify with the body, you're striving for something higher. You might have not realized it, but you know what the goal is. So sometimes they do not know what the goal of existence is. They might be going on, you know, giving out free lollipops and umbrellas in summer to, you know, help people not get cancer, etc. That is a nice gesture. But let's get to the crux of it. Let's get real. Let's get to life. How are you actually going to help someone, and how are you going to inspire someone long term? That can only happen from a spiritual point of view. So we're not against people being nice and helping you cross the road and being soft-hearted, etc. That is very good. But at the same time, they should know what real humanitarian work is. Not just saving the jacket, but saving the real person. Not just giving material education, but giving spiritual education. That is the real work. That is the real humanitarian work. Now, people who work like that, they have the best qualities, because they're seeing the essence of your existence, and they're seeing the value of your existence, and that's the only thing that they see, and they want to magnify that. Now, that is the best quality, to see that you're part and parcel of Krishna. There's some serious, drastic health tip that happens, then they say, oh my God, what's been happening? Even with people who are very obese, they themselves say, I don't know how I got so big, until they go to the doctor, and the doctor tells them, listen, if you go on like this, you will have about 3 months to live. Because you start contracting high blood pressure, you have heart problems because your heart is functioning on double time, and then you have foot problems because of the pressure of your weight, etc. So in Kali Yuga, unfortunately, that type of intelligence, we know it's not first class, it's not second class, it's not third class, it's another type of, I call it Kali Yuga intelligence. You know, things repeatedly happen to you and you don't wake up until it's almost about the most crucial moment in your life, that then you realize, what have I been doing? So some of these parents, only when they hear that their child has a heart problem, their child is 10 years old, they have, you know, diabetes type 2. Only up until that point, then they decide, okay, now we have to do something. But otherwise, they just think, oh, he's just a kid. You know, I can't not allow my kid to do anything. You know, there's more children watching TV than adults. And that one-eyed guru is a very big problem, because children spend most of their time in developed countries watching TV. And when you watch TV, what happens? You eat. You keep eating, and you don't. Kids need to play and burn that energy. But if they're sitting and watching 6 hours of TV every day for about 5 years, then that is why you have attention deficit disorders. That's why you have, you know, like high blood pressure. That's why you have kids with so many weird diseases, because the lifestyle is terrible. So, unfortunately, in Kali Yuga, people wait till the last minute and they try and wake up, which is unfortunate. Okay, I'll stop there. Grant Rajman, Bhagavatam, okay.